Welcome to The Social Network Show. How do you feel about social technology and this connected, networked world we live in? Your host of The Social Network Show, Dr. J, interviews informed and entertaining guests to tackle the most pressing digital issues of interest to business professionals and nonprofit leaders, to parents and educators, and to anyone wondering where all this is taking us. And now, your host, experimental psychologist, Dr. Jane Karwoski.
This episode of The Social Network Show is brought to you in part by PulseInsights.com. Pulse Insights adds a valuable new dimension to your website analytics through microsurveys scientifically designed with you to find out what you most need to know about your website visitors. You'll see an example at thesocialnetworkstation.com. Please go to PulseInsights.com. Take a look and ask for a demo of how they can help you know what your visitors want. The theme of today's social network show is the good, the bad, and the horrifying. We'll be talking with Jim Nico, founder and CEO of Social Network Intermedia, which is our parent company at the Social Network Show. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Fine, Dr. J. Thank you for having me on the show. It's been a while.
Yes, we'll let you on every once in a while. Hey, we're going to talk about what else? Social networks. What do you think social networks elicit? What type of opinions, and why do you think they're such strong opinions?
Well, first of all, I think that because social networks are such a shift in the way we communicate, the speed with which we communicate, and sometimes even the style, it's like everybody is on social networks, or the very few that may not be on social networks seem to think that maybe we're all aliens or something, you know, looking at our phones and, you know, Twitterizing, stuff like that.
Right. Well, I have something else I want to talk to you about that when we get through with this topic with regard to everyone looking at their phones. But let me ask you this. What was your most astonishing experience on a social network?
Okay, well, that's easy because we're going back a few years now, but basically I had gotten off one social network and onto another. Actually, I got on LinkedIn, and almost within minutes of joining the network, I got I guess you'd call it like it came through an email, but it was like a LinkedIn message from a professor. And basically, she asked me if I wanted to speak in front of the state of Nevada about our company, et cetera. And then the most astonishing, I mean, that was astonishing enough. But what really amazed me was that chance meeting or maybe fated meeting led to my meeting you. And so I met my business partner because of a social network, LinkedIn.
Right. And that was the CEO of Lucene Biotech. And her desire was to start a laboratory here, a biotechnology or a microbiology laboratory here in Las Vegas. And so to support her, since she was one of my classmates at UNLV, I went to her kickoff networking event, and you were supporting her too. And so there we were. So what do you think, if we go on to one of the topics that we've discussed a lot on the Social Network Show and between among us at Social Network Intermedia, how do you think the rights of women, girls, and underprivileged groups can be helped by social networks?
Well, I see, first of all, I think it's a brilliant question, and I basically see social networks as sort of like fire. I mean, they can warm, and they can fuel, and they can actually ignite communication and relationships and I guess ongoing communication and deepening relationships. But at the same time, I think that like fire, social networks have the ability to burn people. And so basically, if I got the question right, I think it's that there's a danger on social networks that you don't know who you're dealing with all the time. And of course, that can be a real problem, especially for young people that are inexperienced in communication and maybe even a little bit naive or inexperienced regarding dealing with danger. So I think there's always a risk there.
Right. It's sort of like another dimension to the world, to our life, and just another set of challenges where the same things need to be done as in the face-to-face world as far as rearing children and so forth and protecting ourselves. Now, you mentioned earlier, and I want to just digress a little bit. Oh, before I do that, if you are listener wants to read about what women told us on this question and a number of others, then I created a bit.ly URL. It's bit.ly/womendiscusssocial. And each word is capitalized. I realized after I did that that it's case sensitive. So capital for women and discuss and social. And that'll take you to the whole collection of responses that we got a while back. And one of the responders was and online misogyny. So they had some interesting information about what they did to control abuse online and so forth. But there's also some things that are not related to that. So, but Jim, you mentioned everybody with their, I don't know how you would describe it, but everybody with their phone in their hand and looking at it. And even among my college students, I have a tremendous complaint about that when we discuss technology, that, you know, people are not talking to each other when they're out at a restaurant and so on. But, you know, I got to thinking about other technologies and, of course, anything we use as a tool to extend our abilities as human beings is a technology or an aspect of it. What about, do you remember that old expression, oh, so-and-so, they've always got their nose in a book?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it was really popular, too. You know, it was like, and it really was descriptive. Everybody knew what that meant instantly.
Right. So, and I remember, too, just like parents have rules now about leaving your cell phone, maybe in a basket where everybody puts their devices when they're going to have a meal together. And it was a rule in our house. You couldn't, no books at the table. You couldn't be reading. Well, why? Because basically the same reason as for the cell phones and devices, you're not paying attention to those that are around you. You're not having discussions with your family or, you know, various things like that. So I'm just curious and wanting to talk about how much difference is there really? So let's just talk about the differences between a book and a smartphone.
Well, first of all, I think in a book, I mean, if you think about it in terms of fiction, in that someone could be absorbed in a story that they're reading. And mm-hmm. and so in a way, if a child is sitting at the dinner table and they're arguably supposed to be paying attention to their food and to the people at the table, you could make the case, I guess, that someone, that like a child, could be escaping from the moment by dealing with or attempting to deal with the characters in a book or even imagination. I think there's a lot of similarities. I think it's a really smart analogy that you have there. And then on the other hand, there may be a little bit of a difference in the sense that if a child is sitting at the table, iPhone in hand, texting, let's say, for example, or even on a social network, like writing on a post on there, et cetera, the idea could be that they could, in their own minds, be thinking, you know, I may be escaping here, what, you know, what I'm doing in terms of dinner and my parents or whatever, but I'm escaping to something else. I mean, they could actually be in communication. So there's that extra dimension to where, you know, they could be ambivalent. Hey, I want to talk to my girlfriend. She's telling me something important. So I can see why people are sort of torn by the whole problem, or I guess.
Right. And of course, one obvious thing, too, is that, and you have just described it, the smartphone is interactive, whereas the book, except in very limited ways, is not. However, you often hear, and you know from our discussions, that one of my pet peeves is for people to refer to online life as not real. life, or people they're talking, you know, the real people in their lives are sitting around them. But the people on the other end of the communication are just as real, but they're not physically present. So if we can avoid trying to draw a line between real and unreal for the smartphone, but for books, especially obviously fiction, those people are not real. Television is another example, I suppose, in that soap operas. Look at the fuss that's made over the retirement of a longtime soap opera star, because people really got into soap operas as if, and still do, as if they're real people and real lives, and they want to know what's happening within that world. I had a strange experience with that once when I went back to somewhere I had spent many years and went to visit an old friend, and she didn't have time to talk to me because it was time for her soap opera. So I thought, okay, those people are obviously more important to you than what I thought was an old and close friendship. So there have been a lot of these problems earlier on with other forms of technology, be it books or fiction, even if it's nonfiction. If you're more interested in that than what's going on around you, and what's going on around you does have some expectations of your paying attention, then that's as much of a problem. So how can we transfer, you might say, or apply the same principles that we have dealt with those older technologies to this new one?
Well, for one thing, I think, yeah, there's a little bit of a parallel to some of Dr. Elizabeth Englander's work. I'll never forget when she said, you know, we can't really, it's very difficult, at least, to get kids off social networks, off their devices, if you will, by telling them or taking away a phone or a computer or an iPad or whatever. That's difficult because they can just go to their friends and get on theirs. So, I mean, we know how kids are. So that, but her approach, I thought, was really powerful in that she said, but parents should tell their kids what they're thinking, what they may be or may not be missing. And in other words, share their values with kids. Hey, it's valuable that when you're at the table, you might want to listen to your friend's mom talk because she's really helped you in the past and you don't want to miss what she's going to say. Well, the beauty of that is, you know, she's not saying, look, you need to put your phone in your pocket and not do any of that. She's not saying that. What she is saying is that this is valuable to me that you consider listening to that person without your phone on or without doing both things at once. And the thing that got me about Dr. Englander, that approach being so powerful, is then the next time that the child is, let's say, in a situation like that, they have been affected by what their parents said or what their guardian said. You know? And so they're able to formulate their own values based on the guidance of the parent, the teacher, the guardian type figure. And that is what leads to the real change.
Good point.
Thank you.
And I want to talk now. I know that you've heard me, Jim, you have heard me, and our listeners have heard me promote stamps.com before. And I really appreciate their support of this show. But right now is your chance to just try it. If you or your staff spend valuable time going to the post office, please give stamps.com a try. You won't be risking a thing, and stamps.com makes mailing and shipping any letter, any package easy. You use your own computer and printer to print and buy official stamps, official U.S. postage. So right now, use my promo code SOCIAL for this special offer. It's a no-risk trial plus a $110 bonus offer, and that is the digital scale and up to $55 free postage. The digital scale helps you decide the best class of mail based on your needs and calculates the exact postage needed. Now, I say it's a no-risk trial, But while that is definitely true for you, Stamps.com is willing to take a risk, because if you opt out after your month-long free trial, the digital scale and any postage left is yours to keep. And if you're afraid you'll forget to opt out if you find it's not for you, just note the end of your trial period on your calendar. That's what I did with my free trial of Amazon.Prime, and I already canceled because I didn't use it that much, but there it was on my calendar reminding me of when that free trial period was over. But I suspect you're going to want to keep Stamps.com because their rate is really reasonable. So please don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on that little microphone icon at the top of the homepage and type in social. That's the promo code. You will get a promotional offer by listening to the show. That's Stamps.com. Enter social. So, Jim, if we get, and you know that we've got our digital scale there in the office. And
yeah, I love the scale. And the company is just so friendly, the people that we've dealt with. And I'm really excited to get into this new way of, and more convenient way of using the postage from stamps.com. And I'm pretty excited about it. And I really admire the company and the innovations.
Yeah, Terry is, she's done tutorials on it. She says that tutorials are really easy to follow. And then she bought some postage. And I said, Terry, we have free postage with our free trial. So don't forget, you've got free postage to use. Okay, well, this is your host, Jane Karwoski, and you're listening to Jim Niko, CEO of Social Network Intermedia. He will share more thoughts with you about social networks in the second half of today's episode of The Social Network Show.
Questions? Comments? Reach out to us. Our email address is questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. Or find us on Twitter @SocialNetShow.
You're listening to The Social Network Show. I'm your host, Dr. J, and I'm talking with Jim Niko, founder and CEO of Social Network Intermedia, about what else? Social networks. Okay, Jim, my next question is, how do you think social networks can become safer?
Okay, this is one a favorite of mine. As you know, a long time ago, it seems a lot of years ago, I think it is now, I actually challenged Zuckerberg to a debate, and I never did get an answer. But one of the reasons I did that was because I still debate him if he ever wants to, but Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook. But the point of it was, and still is, that basically I think that the owners of social networks need to sound and act mature and actually care about and put caring in action about those that are on their social networks. I mean, after all, without social networkers, there would be no wealthy social network owners, whether it's Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, any number of these social networks. And so I say, you know, let's get real about this. And I know it's business, and I know, you know, they don't really have to do certain things, but I would appreciate it if they would show that they care about the safety of people and take responsibility. I used the analogy years ago is that social networks, to me, especially for the young people and the vulnerable people, women, children, girls online, is that social networks are like playgrounds. And I think that basically they can be fun, they can be helpful, et cetera. But if we don't have anyone that's willing to take responsibility for safety on the playground, they're very dangerous. And so I say to social network owners, you know, get real and get on board and help. Treat the social networkers as if they're part of your family. And so I say, you know, if that's the bottom line. You know, they have to be involved, or I'm inviting them to be involved, and I don't know if they ever will.
Well, some people have taken that to heart. Of course, we have Mr. Weinstein of MeWe.com has really led the pack, if there is a pack, he's led the small group of social networks that are really going for privacy and so forth. E-Family eFamily.com was another one that we've talked to who is trying to make things safer and more private. I have something new to mention today, and it's brand new because I just found it online this morning. And it is a book called The Growing Gap Between Emerging Technologies and Legal Ethical Oversight. And they call it the pacing problem. And the point is that information technology is not the only place where we face this problem. And what's happening is, you know, just like in Moore's Law, the rate of change and innovation is just increasing. Even not just the technology, but the rate of increase is increasing. So what's happening is that those who would regulate or manage the civilization, you might say, the good, common good for society when these new devices and innovations come out, are lagging way, way behind. They're not keeping pace. They're not even increasing their speed. They are slowing down because they're bogged down by not just the mechanism of bureaucracy and the partisanship and the lack of agreement on things, but also just by the complexity of these problems. There's so many industries affected in the various areas. It's not just information technology, but nanotechnology, for instance, synthetic biology, which is developing synthetic organs. It would be great for transplants, but it does make one feel a little creepy. So that is a factor in what you're talking about, because one big aspect of this, one possible solution, is that the industries themselves step up and pay attention to the possible repercussions on society. Now, my response to that is, good luck with that one. I don't know. Do you have more hope than I do on that? Are you a little more optimistic, Jim?
Well, I am, and I'm not. it's like what was just going through my mind, and I, you know, the political scene right now is so avid with Trump and doing what he does, and I'm not really too into politics, but the interesting thing that I find with him, and I remember I was listening, and I mean this apolitically in a way, it's just as a human being, I was hearing him interviewed recently, and he said, "You ask a question and I answer it." And I'm thinking, wow, that's refreshing. You know, and he kept saying that a couple of times. Why? I mean, that seems almost too basic, you know, 101. But I think that one of the things that hit me when I've listened to, for example, some of the owners of social networks, that they sound like politicians not answering questions. You know, I mean, they don't give what we used to call way back when straight answers. They don't do that. Because they're not forced to, or maybe they don't care. I don't know. But that leads me to a certain level of hopelessness, because I don't think that people are necessarily taking some of the dangers online as seriously as they could, especially some of the people that could make a difference. So that part, I'm, you know, pretty down about, but because a lot of people just won't answer questions. You know, they answer questions you're not asking them, political people and others. But on the other side of the coin, I do believe that there is a lot of good happening on social networks. For example, that the recent Cosby, the magazine with all the women that had alleged some kind of abuse there, and what, 35 women on the cover of New York Magazine, and all of a sudden they're all over Twitter and all over the social networks. And somebody said, I think I'm paraphrasing, he said something like, years ago we didn't have social media, so we can't be shut up. We get to express our opinions. So I love the fact that people are really getting good at social networking and bringing their message to the world and learning from their mistakes. So there's a lot of good out there in that sense, you know, the speed of communication on these networks. And so that I love that part. I think that's a good sign.
There's another aspect, too, when you mention about what obligations social network owners have had. We can't forget our power as consumers. And that, I really do think that I've seen that grow from the time that we started podcasting, that now there is a lot more calling for this type of thing from members of social networks to expressing in ways that the owners, proprietors, whomever, the high-tech companies will hear. Because, you know, if we vote with our custom, you might say, our customer money and act like we do with consumers, the consumership of any kind, then that in time will have an effect. And I really do see that there is an effect going on. Things. I don't know. I do see some light at the horizon, actually.
Well, I know you do. And I know that you study this phenomenon. I know the cyber civil rights initiative and the people like Marianne Franks that's helping there, Danielle Citrin and her work. And so I'm Holly Jacobs over there. And mm-hmm. just Carol Todd with cyberbullying. The whole world seems to be looking toward these leaders that are looking at social networks. I applaud Twitter to the extent that they can get a hold of shutting down accounts. I mean, this is alleged because I'm not there, but to shut down accounts for people that are using networks for negativity and the wrong reasons, I mean, to harm. And anywhere mm-hmm. there's harm or cruelty or harm or threats, I mean, that I think people are realizing that their networks can flourish even if they ban certain people. I know FARC, remember when we had FARC?
Mm-hmm.
And how he talked about how when he was made aware, this is the founder and CEO, I believe, of FARC, when he was mm-hmm. made aware that there were certain negatives happening on a big network on FARC, he was surprised. He didn't realize how much was going on that he wasn't aware of, but when he did become aware, he took steps right away way to make it a safer network. And that's just guts. I mean, part of it is guts and caring, you know, and the kinds of things that I think a lot of the leaders just don't appear to care. And that's the sad part. But the good news is that I think people are realizing that they can care and get even more members, you know, make even right. more money if that's what they're into.
And not be terribly hurt by it, and that financially, and that's what Drew said of FARC. There was very little pushback when he said no more misogynistic comments, and so we're proud of him and glad that that's the way it worked out. So you mentioned the Twitter, and I wanted to do a shout out to if you Google Twitter ISIS and census. This research company did a census of Twitter. They did a lot of high-tech research on what was going on. And in 2014, last year, was when Twitter took a strong initiative to reduce the number of accounts and suspend accounts that were associated with recruiting for ISIS or ISIL, whichever. And if you Google that, you will be brought to a PDF or the report. And it's fascinating because it talks about the problems inherent in this. And really, there are some people with the opinion that, well, it helps to not shut them all down because we keep an eye on what they're doing type of thing. So it's interesting because, like all of the things we seem to deal with on this show, it is complex. And if we'd like to see simple solutions, unfortunately, they too often won't work. But, we keep trying, and I think you'll find that report interesting on the census. Okay, well, Jim, do you have any parting thoughts for us?
Well, yeah, I guess the bottom line, and right back to the beginning of the show, the metaphor, if you think of social networks as fire, you just I encourage people, young and old, to remember that fire can warm us and help us, and it can also burn us. And so I think that's the key. It's a matter of being very, very careful with fire and realizing always that it has that dual purpose, that it can hurt or help. And I hope everybody that is listening also may listen to our other shows. The Women Worldwide is on the socialnetworkstation.com, and also the Hashtag Show. We're proud of these shows, and we're also open to producing new shows if you're interested in podcasting, which is white hot. So thank you, Dr. J, for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jim. And again, if you want to read what women told us on this subject, use the URL bit.ly/CapitalWomen/Discuss/Social. I mean, that could be misunderstood. Anyway, keep trying. And please add your own comments to that. That'll take you to the socialnetworkstation.com and our blog, where those comments are included. So thank you very much for listening. We bring you leaders in business, cyber citizenship, and the ethical, legal, and social implications of our networked, connected world. Please shop for our app in Google Play if you're Android, or the iTunes App Store. Both are called The Social Network Show. Our listener survey site, by the way, is podsurvey.com/social. So let us know a little bit more about who you are, and we'll be able to select advertisers on that, the basis of what you like to know about. So do have fun and be safe, online and off, until we meet you here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the worldwide show dedicated to social media networking and understanding the connected, networked world we live in. Listen to our archive shows on thesocialnetworkshow.com and follow us on Twitter at Social Net Show. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia Incorporated. The views and opinions expressed are those of our host and guest and may not be the views and opinions of Social Network Intermedia.